is a true story taken from an actual medical file.
I put the tray down there, nurse. Well, Jim, we're going to remove the bandages and change the dressings. It could be that you'll be able to see a little this morning, be able to observe some faint outlines. On the other hand, it may be early yet, too early. Whatever it is, I don't want you to be disappointed.
I don't know about being disappointed, Doctor. Right now, I'm just plain scared.
That morning of September the 4th, 1956, I'd been 12 years in the dark. Perhaps I'd grown used to it, grown to depend on it, built my way of life around it. I hadn't seen for 12 years, and all the people who made up my existence were people whose faces I had never known. Was it strange that, for one frightened moment, I wanted to leave the bandages alone and let that world of mine stay undisturbed?
Myers, makers of Clairol hair care products, Ipana toothpaste, and Score clear hair cream for men, take great pleasure in presenting Medical File. Factual stories of the men and women whose vigilance guards our lives. A reconstruction of clinical case histories, step by step with the doctors who were there. Tonight, you'll hear the story, Life in the Dark, in Medical File.
Christmas Eve, 1944. Somewhere, I suppose, they were singing carols in the streets. But not where we were. We'd been attacking the hill since the first light of that day. Now it was late afternoon.
If somebody doesn't get that blasted gun up on the hill, it's going to get us.
Take it easy, Eddie. They're trying.
They've been trying all day. Unmissed machine gunners and a stinking mortar. And we're held up out here in the open.
It's never easy to take a hill like this one.
Stupid fools shining up their pants. Couldn't they have planned a way to go round it? Look out!
Oh, that was close.
Too darn close. We're like sitting ducks.
Here's another. Get down!
They've got the range.
Where's Morgan?
Steve, find out from Morgan what's happening.
Yes, either we go forward or back, but let's get out of here.
Look out there! Eddie, down! You all right in there? Hey, Eddie. Jim. You all right?
Oh, brother.
Hey, stretcher bears. Stretcher bears!
And these two we've kept on liquid diet, sir.
Good. Now, about this man here.
Private James Wilson, C Company, 221st Battalion.
Let me see that card, will you?
Oh, here, Major.
Oh, thanks. Well, Private Wilson, how do you feel today?
I'd feel a lot better if somebody told me whereabouts I am.
You're in base hospital. I'm Major Lewis. You were brought down here from the emergency field station 2 days ago.
Base hospital? It feels good.
Then you're feeling better.
Anything would be better than being up there.
Pretty bad, I hear.
Bad enough for me. I'm no hero.
Who is?
What have they got these bandages on my face for?
You were injured by a mortar explosion. There's been some damage to your eyes.
Oh, yes. They hurt like the devil. So does my head.
You very nearly didn't make it, Wilson. According to your card, a shell exploded almost on top of you.
What about the others? Eddie Thompson? Steve? Rest of my patrol.
We don't know anything here. Just relax now, Private. Get plenty of rest.
How bad are my eyes?
We won't know for a while yet.
Am I going to be able to see him?
Now, that's a question I can hardly answer.
Why not?
Because I'd prefer to leave it for the experts. Now, don't worry, Wilson. You've had a bad time, and your eyes have been affected in some way by that explosion. That I won't deny.
Why are the bandages on? For heaven's sake, why won't somebody tell me?
Bags just yet. 2 or 3 weeks, I suppose. As soon as you're fit to travel. Don't worry, Wilson. You'll get the best attention we can possibly give you.
Three weeks later, mid-January 1945, I was invalided back to the General Hospital. There were bandages still around my eyes. I'd been in the dark ever since that moment on Christmas Eve. And when they finally removed the bandages, I was still in the dark. They took them off one morning. I could hear the birds singing outside the windows of the ward. Somehow, I knew the sun was shining, but I didn't see it. No, that wasn't the first time I knew I was blind. I think I'd known it all along. That day was simply the day that hope ran out.
Sit down here, Wilson. Can you make it? There's the chair.
I'll make it.
Yes, a good man.
Oh, I'm getting quite expert. Another few months and I'll be an authority on all kinds of things. Like finding my way in the dark and sensing when people are near and making baskets.
We've put you through a lot of tests.
The lot, surely. It seems like weeks you've been testing me for one thing or another.
Well, it is weeks.
Does it amount to anything?
I've got some news for you, Wilson.
You don't have to take it easily with me, Doc. I've known for weeks that I'm blind, and I'm going to stay blind. Well, aren't I?
The right eye will have to be removed.
Removed?
Yes, have to be taken out. It's been injured beyond repair. By leaving it in, we only take pointless risks.
And the other eye? The left?
Well, there's an operation which entails removal of the cataract-clouded lens. I think we could perform that in 4 or 5 months' time. There's no reason at all why it shouldn't be partially successful.
Partially?
So that you can distinguish light and shade and see large objects from a close distance.
Well, that would be something.
It's not a lot. I wish I could promise more.
I was 8 months in hospital before the operations were finally complete. At the end of that time, my vision was about 5/200ths. It meant that from 5 feet away, I could see the big letter E at the top of the sight chart. 5 feet. I should have been able to see it from 200. November 1945. I was due to leave hospital. I had a last examination from Dr. Benson.
Well, Jim, we're going to miss your cheery face around here. And I'm not kidding, it is a cheerful face. A lot different to when you came here.
Yes, a year nearly. You get to accept things.
Yes, I know.
What's the eye look like now, Doc?
About the same, Jim. We can detect scraps of metal floating around the inside of the eye, and there's a membrane of scar tissue blocking your sight. But the answer is still the same, Jim. We can't operate any further for fear of destroying the sight of the eye completely.
Look, Doctor, I'm as good as blind. I can't read. I have to count steps so I won't fall down. I can't walk in crowds without help. Don't you think I might like to take that risk?
It'd be a risk for no purpose, Jim. The operation wouldn't succeed.
I see.
Yes, you keep on getting flashes of hope, don't you? Like the time you heard about those corneal transplants.
The time you had to explain to me that was only for people with a scarred or diseased cornea of the eye. But my trouble was deeper.
Jim, we've been over all this before. I'm a lot more interested in what you're going to do when you get out of here.
Well, let's see if you react like all the others. I'm going back to college to study. I want to go on with the course I had to drop when I joined up. I want to be a schoolteacher.
That's fine.
You didn't laugh.
Why should I?
You know why you should. You know why the others did. A blind man going back to school.
I think it's pretty wonderful.
Thank God you said that.
Jim...
I was beginning to think I was the only one who believed it possible. I was beginning to think that perhaps I was stepping too high.
You get in there and show them. And Jim?
Yes?
I hope we run into each other someday.
So do I, Doctor. Yes, so do I.
Sit down, Mr. Wilson. There. Can I help you?
No, it's all right, thank you, sir.
Wilson, I'm going to wish you the same as I wish every student at the beginning of a new year. I'm going to wish you luck.
Thank you, Professor.
We have to discuss your handicap for a few moments now to make certain arrangements. And thereafter, we won't refer to it again.
That's the way I want it, sir.
You'll be treated like any other student. If you fail to turn up at your lectures, you'll get short shift from me, the same as anyone else.
Thank you, sir.
Now then, you're going to need somebody to help you in your reading. I understand you have a slight amount of vision.
I might be able to read big headline print with a magnifying glass.
Then obviously you're going to need help. Can you afford to pay someone?
Yes, sir. I have my college fees paid and a full pension.
Well, there are plenty of students working their way through and others anxious to supplement their spending money. I don't think we'll have any trouble getting someone to read with you and help you study. I'll look through the lists and see who's put their name down for additional college books.
Come in. Yes? Who is it?
Mr. Wilson, I'm Ann Field. Professor Norman said you need a reader.
Oh, will you sit down, Miss Field? I'm afraid the room's in a bit of a mess. I've been trying to put my clothes away.
You sit down. Let me do it.
Now, hold on a moment. I want to employ you as a reader, not a professional valet.
Never mind, just for once. Sit down and let me take care of it.
I don't have to be helped.
When it comes to unpacking clothes, all men have to be helped, and you're no different to anyone else.
I'm glad you said that.
Well, I'm not, are you? Sit down and stop arguing. Let me fix this mess.
Her name was Ann Field, and she was 22 years old. She had a way of helping me do things that never made me awkward or embarrassed, the way it so often did with others. We studied English and history together, and she read my textbooks for me all that autumn and winter, and the following spring. The end of the year celebration was our engagement party. A few months later, we were married. For the first time since that day in Italy, when I lost my sight, I could see that there was going to be a future. As English master at a small private school, I stayed there 2 years, and then applied for and was accepted at a larger and better-known college. I was learning to live with my handicap, but it was still an ordeal to meet people for the first time, especially someone like Henry Miller, the principal of Leicester College, who called me for an interview when my application was first being considered.
Well, let's discuss this quite frankly, Mr. Wilson. Just what degree of vision do you have at the present time?
Well, sir, when I left hospital in 1945, it was 5/200. I think it may be a little less than that now.
In fact, very little vision at all.
Yes, I'm afraid very little.
Yet the principal of your former school has given you a splendid reference. How do you manage it? Correcting study papers, for instance.
My wife went through college with me, sir. She reads the papers, and we mark them together.
And during class, how do you manage?
Memory. I know the syllabus by heart. I very soon get to know my students by their voices. It's worked out during the past few years. I think it can go on working.
I'm sure it can. Believe me, I was most impressed by your application. The job is open to you, Wilson.
Thank you, sir.
You will start at the beginning of term next week. And, by the way, we all have handicaps. I've got a gammy leg. Welcome to Leicester College, Mr. Wilson. I'm looking forward to working with you.
In 1950, I went to teach at Leicester College. I was still there 6 years later. I don't think it would be sheer emotion that makes me say those were the happiest years of my life. Somehow, all the things I'd ever wanted to be and do were there at Leicester. I was happy in my work, in my associates, relaxed and at ease with my students, and very much in love with my wife. I lived in the dark, but I was never alone.
Ah, not much in the paper tonight, darling. The government being attacked again.
Nothing that won't be on the late night news bulletin. Oh, well, I'd better get you to go over those exam corrections, Anne. Young Rayner and Hendricks are coming round about it.
Seems to me we have at least a couple of your students around here nearly every night.
You don't mind, do you?
Mine? I love it. If it's not one of the boys, it's another master. And everyone who drops by makes me realize what a success you've made of this, Jim.
I couldn't have done it without your help.
You couldn't have done it without being the kind of person you are. I'll get those exam papers.
Thank you, my dear.
Strange.
Hmm?
I just noticed a name here in the paper. Benson, Dr. Gordon Benson.
Benson? Now, that was the name of the surgeon in the Army Hospital.
Listen. Visiting eye surgeon, Dr. Gordon Benson, who is in the city to give a series of lectures on new ophthalmic advances, dined yesterday with a select group of doctors when plans for a new eye clinic at the Royal Hospital were discussed. Oh, Jim, it sounds very like the same man.
You know, I think it is. Jove, he's come on in the world.
Yes, hasn't he?
Oh, Benson. He wasn't a bad sort. I remember he said he hoped we'd run into each other someday. Fancy me remembering that. Oh, it must be all of 12 years ago.
Why don't you drop him a line?
Well, if he's dining with a select group of doctors and lecturing, he won't want to be bothered with an old case history who happens to have become a school teacher.
Oh, I don't know. I think you're a very special old case history.
I doubt if he does. Benson must have had thousands of patients like me.
Well, just the same, he might like to hear. Why not write him a note? Send it care of the university.
Oh, I suppose I could.
Here, before your students turn up, I'll run a piece of paper into your portable and you can dictate something.
You're very keen on this, aren't you? Look, Anne, don't get any ideas, darling.
Like what?
Like thinking that an eye specialist lecturing on advances in eye surgery might be able to do something for me.
Well, he might.
He made that point plain 12 years ago. There's nothing that can be done.
All right, Jim. Then we won't get any ideas. But let's drop him a line just the same.
We sent a letter off to Dr. Benson, and an answer came the following day. If I thought he'd forgotten me in a mass of case histories since then, I was far from right. He came to dinner 2 nights later, and he not only remembered, he was still interested. He insisted on making an examination while dinner was being prepared, and afterwards, over coffee, brought up the subject again.
You know, Jim, this is what I really enjoy. Meeting a man after so many years, finding him a success in every possible way. Yes, I remember when you left hospital, you were going to try and become a teacher. I often wondered what had happened to you.
Here's the reason for my success, Doctor.
Oh, yes, I can well believe it.
Now, that's not true. I only helped. Jim did the toughest parts alone. Like standing in front of a class he couldn't see for the first time. That takes a special kind of courage.
You've never seen your wife?
Only as a blurred shape.
Jim, when I examined your eye before dinner, I must confess I was, rather surprised.
Why, Doctor?
Because it's in such good condition. I would have expected deterioration, but, there's hardly any. Yes, do you know, I think we ought to operate.
What?
Operate, Dr. Benson?
I think there's a very good chance of improving the vision.
But you said 12 years ago.
Ah, yes, Jim. 12 years ago, we didn't know about this new technique. The membrane that was formed at the time of your injury is what's blocking the sight. Well, I could cut through it. Well, the operation itself is quite simple. We've been doing it successfully over the past few years.
Yes, but what if it didn't work?
Then there's just a chance you'd lose the sight of the eye completely.
It's my last one. It may be only about 5% effective, but I'd be worse off without it.
I'd say the chances are 70 to 30 in favor of success. Oh, but look here, why don't you and Anne talk it over and give me an answer in a few days' time?
Do we need to talk about it?
No. No, I don't suppose we do. This was in the back of Anne's mind when she wrote to you, Doctor. Mine too, I suppose. Although I wasn't going to admit it. If there's a chance for me to see again, I want to take it. How soon can you operate? The operation took place 2 days later. And 72 hours after that, the bandages were removed. I'll admit it, I was scared. All the people who made up my existence were people whose faces I had never seen more than as a blurred outline. I was scared of what I was going to see, and scared of not being able to see at all. And then the bandages came off, and all at once, I knew everything was going to be all right. Why didn't you tell me you were beautiful?
Oh, but I'm not.
The loveliest thing I've ever seen. Just stand there, darling. Don't move away. I want to go on looking.
Well, you're going to be able to look for the rest of your life, Jim. Now, how about letting me make a small examination?
You look fine too, Doc.
Thanks.
Is it going to last? I mean, really last?
Yes, it's going to last, Jim, all your life. You'll need strong glasses, of course, but you'll see as well as anyone else. Now, we're putting the bandages back on until the wounds heal completely. You'll just have to be patient for a few more days.
4 days after that, and the bandages came off for the last time. That afternoon, September the 8th, 1956, I went through my last examination from Dr. Benson. And heard the final words of reassurance.
Wounds all healed, Jim. Vision is improved 75%. Well, I'm leaving for my hometown tomorrow, but you'll be perfectly all right now.
There's no way I can thank you, Doc.
No. Thanks aren't needed. I'm only sorry we didn't meet like this a few years ago. Perhaps we could have restored your sight that much sooner.
I've no regrets. Those 12 years in the dark taught me a new way to live. I think I'll be all the better for it.
Yes, I'm sure you will.
Oh, by the way, there's quite a view from this window.
Now he's showing off, Dr. Benson.
Hmm?
He's been staring at everything all over town like a country cousin.
What's so interesting down there, Jim?
I see by the neon sign across the street that they serve drinks. How about coming along and joining in a small celebration.